This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about therapy. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. For a lot of people, their emotional state is deeply connected to current events. The pandemic, racism, gun violence, police shootings, climate change. It's a huge part of what makes them feel anxious, unsafe, or angry. With polarization and political tensions running high, these topics can become a minefield in families, in relationships, and at the therapist's office. When those topics come up in therapy, what are therapists supposed to do? Do they reveal their own thoughts on a topic, take a stance, stay quiet and listen? Jad Slaman looked into the ethical tensions this brings up.
The idea that therapists are supposed to be a blank slate, leave their personal opinions outside and just sit back and listen, Minneapolis therapist Patrick Dougherty stopped believing that years ago.
You know, that's just bunk. That's just a fantasy we have.
The first time he decided to take a stance was the day after the mass shooting at a gay nightclub in Florida, where 49 people were murdered.
And that morning, I just sat at my table and just wept. And it was so clear to me that I have to bring this up because it was so disturbing.
He wrote an open letter and put it out in the waiting room. He doesn't remember exactly what it said, but the gist of it was, we can talk about this.
It was a clumsy attempt of saying, you know, the world is in chaos and it's affecting most of us.
Patrick's basic philosophy became this. Police shootings, the far right, terrorism, they are affecting you in profound ways in your everyday life by way of affecting your emotional well-being.
And so it's for most people, it's just like, oh my golly, why isn't this common dialogue?
If the world is affecting us, Patrick thinks we have to talk about it. That means diving into divisive issues. It means letting politics into the therapist's office, an idea that was unthinkable for therapists only a generation ago. These days, Patrick is even upfront with clients about who he is politically.
So I'm a passionate liberal and very open about that.
In fact, he believes therapist politics sometimes have to be obvious.
I think people need ethical and courageous therapists. I think it's an imperative. You have to do it.
But what happens when a politically upfront therapist meets a client with opposing politics? Patrick tells me about one. He came to his office reluctantly. Christian counselors had failed him, and he was coming out of his third failed marriage.
When it got hard with him is when he came in and started really talking that demeaning stuff about immigrants or women.
Patrick ended up calling out his client, like, hey, you gotta cool it with that stuff or we're not gonna work. The client listened and kept seeing Patrick for quite some time. But this episode illustrates a contradiction in the mental health codes of ethics.
You know, we say in therapy all the time, we want to accept who the client is. At the same time, we say, you have to change the client because that's why they're in therapy.
That's Mitchell Handelsman, a professor of psychology and ethics at the University of Colorado, Denver. He says the point of ethical codes isn't to tell you what to do, but instead how to think about problems. Therapy is, at its heart, a relationship. It's not a lecture or a scolding, but at the same time, some therapists, like Patrick, feel an increasing responsibility to correct their patients' opinions on, say, women or immigrants. Mitchell says the ethics codes don't actually spell out what to do here. The vast majority of therapists, studies show, tend to be lefties. Mental health issues don't discriminate, though, with people of all political stripes dealing with things like depression and anxiety. So how do blue therapists make that connection with red clients who are very different from themselves?
And by the way, this controversy has existed for a long time in terms of religion. That is, there are more atheists among psychotherapists than among the general population. And the question then becomes, can somebody who does not believe in God do therapy with somebody who does?
Nowadays, therapists are dealing with a political divide instead of a religious one.
And part of what I think happened is that politics has become part of identity in a way that things like religion were before.
That's Bill Dougherty, a family therapist and co-founder of Better Angels, a nonprofit that aims to bridge the left-right divide. Bill does a very specific type of therapy. He deals with family breakups and estrangements, I'm never speaking to you again sort of stuff. In his field, there's pre-Trump and post-Trump. Pre-Trump, these breaks were usually caused by some kind of interpersonal conflict, disparaging a partner, cheating, an argument that went too far. But he says after Trump came into the political picture, things got different.
I was confronted with people who had been married for a long time who said where somebody was threatening divorce if their spouse voted for Trump. And then family members cutting each other off, refusing to go to Thanksgiving dinner.
Bill says all of this boils down to one process, polarization. The other guys aren't just wrong about this issue or that. They're 110% wrong, and they're evil. It's a force the therapy world isn't immune to. He tells me about a recent psychological conference where a speaker made the case that any acknowledgement of progress or improvement in race relations in the U.S. was a betrayal to the progressive cause. It's a pretty bold statement folks might find controversial in many circles, but not in Bill's.
That I think there's a kind of evangelistic fervor that's going on in the therapy world, the therapy professions, where you can't even debate a topic like that.
That kind of polarization that shuts down conversation and debate, it makes therapy difficult. He gives me an example. Let's say a white client comes in and starts throwing around racial slurs during a session. He says most therapists can and should address it, draw a line, saying, hey, this type of talk isn't acceptable. Increasingly, though, Bill sees mere political positions carrying the same weight as open slurs in the mind of some therapists.
Let's say a white guy who part of his problem is job stress and maybe he's lost a job and he's having trouble getting another one. And he says something like, you know, I'm a white male and, you know, they want to hire people of color and I don't think it's fair. There are some people in my field who would view that as a racist statement. And I think there is a big ground in between somebody's attitude towards affirmative action and their kind of hateful, dehumanizing speech that they would do in front of me. But that distinction is lost in some of the more left-wing literature in therapy.
Bill is worried that too much political passion on the side of therapists could lead to lots of people shying away from seeking or getting help. It's why Bill doesn't share his politics with anyone. He says it's easier to find common ground that way. When politics comes up in his office, instead of fighting or trying to shut down a client's political position, Bill's strategy is to burrow underneath it. What is it about you personally, your life, and your firsthand experiences that make you feel this way?
I interviewed a woman who was alienated from her parents over politics. Her parents were strong Trump supporters, actually, you know, distributed leaflets for him and so on. And she's a strong liberal blue. One of the commonalities I helped her see is that her parents cared deeply about politics and trying to make a difference for the country, and she does too. And that she got some of her passion for making larger contributions from them.
He says without more common ground, there's a real risk that therapy, that mental health care, will be considered something that's done by lefties for lefties. And that may already be the case now. I talked to researchers who surveyed patients to get a handle on their politics, and they told me they had tremendous difficulty even finding conservative patients to survey. Does that mean that conservatives have far better mental health, or that the right is being left out?
I have certainly had in my practice, people have said to me, I'm a Trump supporter. I hope you don't hate me. That's horrible.
Randy Freeman is a clinical social worker and psychotherapist and a kind of old school Republican.
I liked Ronald Reagan. I liked George Bush.
She noticed, even before Trump, that she was the odd one out as a conservative during the Obama years. Like Bill, though, she thinks Trump supercharged things. Disdain increasingly went alongside simple disagreement.
A lot of my friends, colleagues and friends, are very, very liberal and very judgmental of people who are conservative. So I can't imagine that that doesn't come across in a therapy session. That's what I find disturbing.
Lefty, righty, or right in the middle, I asked each therapist what they thought was on the horizon. Are things going to get hotter or cool down? Interestingly, they all said the other side needs to change, or at least has to do most of the changing. But Randy told me she recently held a workshop for colleagues aimed at their depolarization, having therapists look at themselves and their own reactions to clients. She says the turnout was pretty good. A lot of people showed up, which is promising. It means people want a way out of the current political moment, even if that means giving a little ground. For The Pulse, I'm Jad Slaman.